Hi there, everyone. Welcome to the world of the Game Industry News Podcast, the Gen Lounge. I'm your regional champion, Vincent, and I'm here with youngster Neil in his top-tier Rattata. Say hi, Neil.
Hi.
All right. So with new Pokemon Snap on the horizon, we're taking a brief moment this week to talk about some of our favorite Pokemon series spinoffs. I know Neil was kind of excited to do this because, you know, new Pokemon game usually means a new time to either talk about things we loved from days past or complain about things that we thought were actually not quite as good as what we thought they were as kids.
Or both.
Or both at the same time. That is also something that we can do. So I guess with little to do, I'll let Neil kick this off for us.
Thanks, Vince. So as everyone knows, Pokemon Snap for the Switch was given an April release date. And since Pokemon Snap being mentioned took me way back to the days of playing N64 with my brother and one controller, I wanted to talk about the game a little bit with Vince, and just because him and I both started playing Pokemon around the same time, and these spinoff games sort of kind of just died out around the Wii. So I wanted to really bring up the N64 ones for me, Pokemon Stadium, Stadium 2, and Snap, as kind of like the golden age of Pokemon spinoffs. Obviously, Colosseum was great. But I loved just how simple but yet fun and time-consuming the stadium games and Snap were. Did you have some of those experiences as well, Vince?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I spent entirely too much time playing Pokemon Stadium. Like, I no-lifed Gold and Silver for an entire summer, playing until morning until night, being completely obsessed with it. Because I wanted the stats of my Pokemon to match the stats of the one that showed up in Stadium 2's Round 2 mode, which is where they have like their stats completely maxed out. I knew that if mine matched what they had, then I had like an effectively perfect Pokemon. So I also spent a significant amount of time playing that, though. I have played some of the newer spinoffs that have come out later, so I guess I can be the one who brings those up.
How do I want to say this as carefully as possible? Yeah, with as little cursing as possible. I think the games aged fairly well. I actually went to go see a friend of mine, and he had both Pokemon Stadium and Stadium 2. We actually put the first one in. We each picked three Pokemon for our team. We went up against the different leagues and just switched back and forth for each battle. And even though we are both in or around 30, we had a blast just trying to take on and try to win these all these different cups. And I feel like that it's something that hasn't really aged with newer technology. Maybe it's because of the online or that sort of online battle mechanic that we see. But I just sitting in the same room, drinking a beer, passing a controller back and forth, it was something nostalgic about it. And I kind of miss that.
Yeah, and that's fair. Even though like I still participate in online Pokemon battles, either getting my ass handed to me by or just absolutely destroying children, there is never an in-between. Even though I still do that, there's something kind of magical about how the Pokemon were animated back then. If something used Mega Kick, they actually did an animation of a kick, and then the other Pokemon would reel. And that was just something that like Genius Sonority and Nintendo did when they were designing that game. They made the animations great. Nowadays, they come out with new moves like Triple Axel, where the Pokemon like lifts up in the air, spins three times, and that's how it does the damage. It's not as visually alluring as it used to be, I guess. And that tends to take me out of it just a little bit, though I still do partake of and enjoy like actively playing the mainline games.
I don't know how well a ice skating reference will go over in this podcast, but you know what?
It's them a doing, new move.
Yeah, with them doing triple axel now, you know what that means. Next Generation's going to have Tonya Harding.
Is that the woman who broke the legs of another competitor, or am I thinking of someone else?
You got it mostly right. It's alleged that she paid someone to like take a crowbar or something and hit her competitor's knee so that she couldn't skate and that she could win a medal with the Olympics.
That stuff is serious business.
Yep. So next time you use that triple axel, you got to watch out for the occasional crowbar to the knee.
Yeah, watch out for the sucker punch, I guess.
Snap itself was a really interesting case on N64. It was just interesting to think of someone at a board meeting said, why don't we have a rail-driven Pokemon photography game? And someone actually stopped for a moment and went, please continue. Because just imagine if someone pitched that as a new concept like 3 years ago. Someone would have looked at him and went, I'm sorry, did you say photography Pokemon on rails? Please see yourself out.
I mean, that could be a product of the times, too, because they were very experimental with Pokemon as a property back during that time, because they also had Hey You Pikachu, where you'd have that yes. little microphone attached to your controller, and you try giving commands to the little rat who wouldn't be able to understand you unless you enunciated very clearly.
I have friends from the Mid-Ohio Valley, which is like southern Ohio, northern West Virginia, and literally Pikachu does not understand hillbilly.
It doesn't understand hillbilly. I had a guy from the Philippines over, and we messed around with this particular game, and he came away thinking for certain Pikachu is a racist. Doesn't understand most accents either. Like, obviously voice recognition technology was not great back at that time, but at least with Odama you could fling balls around. You can't even do that with Pikachu without having the cops called on you.
But what I do find interesting is, like, Hey You Pikachu was like a random one-off, but I can actually see a lot of parallels with Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu. Maybe less with the voice commands, but just with the way the game feels, like how you have the Eevee, how it's like a personal connection, like it's, you know, pet it, feed it berries. Like it kind of has that Hey You Pikachu feel to it, but they ditched the obviously potentially racist voice recognition.
Well, you win some, you lose some. Well, so they also tried to, sorry, what?
Nope, go ahead. Go ahead. What I was going to say would probably get cut, so you go ahead.
Oh, okay, perfect. Okay, so let's see. Back during those times, they also did Pokemon Pinball. They did Pokemon Puzzle League, which was like a Tetris Attack clone. I figure Pokemon Pinball is pretty much, that's pretty easy to get from the general name alone.
So you play Yahtzee, right?
That is exactly the case. You throw a whole bunch of dice and then a homeless man punches you in the face. No, it's a pinball game. And you would have to like hit certain parts of the board in order to light up three lights and then catch the Pokemon. And then you have to play in another mode to evolve them. And I was really bad at it because I'm horrible at pinball and I still have nightmares of an NES game called Pinbot. It's very distressing.
I can tell that we're getting up there in years. I still remember the old like Windows 95, Windows 98 pinball.
Actually, you can play that on websites now. People actually they enjoy that quite a bit still. So that's still around.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Oh, you know what one I really loved?
What's that?
The Pokemon trading card game on the Game Boy Color.
Yes.
That was probably the best design trading card video game that I've ever played. And I say this knowing that Yu-Gi-Oh! Has tried to do better than that for decades.
So quick side tangent, because it is not a Gin Lounge unless we have a random side tangent. I actually enjoyed the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card games as well. But the problem is they'd have these really random bugs where I would have a creature out with like 2,500 attack. they would just randomly play an attack power 600 in attack mode. No items, no nothing. They would attack my creature and it would kill it. I didn't lose any life. Their creature didn't die either. But my creature would just randomly die to something 1,300 attack points weaker to it. And it always happened once a battle. So, like I said, the problem was Yu-Gi-Oh! Would try, but they would have these really random glitches, and they would always come at the worst possible time.
It's, for the most part, I only played a couple of those Yu-Gi-Oh! Games. I remember Dark Duel Stories on the Game Boy Color, because I unlocked like every single card in it.
Yeah, I remember that was actually the one I had the issue with.
Really, because I never ran into that particular problem. Did you try turning it off and on again?
Yes, I even changed the batteries because I was paranoid. That was the batteries to it. I was dumb as a kid.
Yeah, I remember being a kid and reading, believing all the stuff you read on the internet. Oh, push this truck and you'll get Mew. This new thing is called Peekablue.
Yes. Oh. I also remember having to print out like a Stephen King novel worth of a game facts just to try to get a walkthrough.
I mean, I had to do that too. Like, I played the game Hoshigami when it was during the time I had my first job, and it was already a retro game by that point. I don't want to make it sound like I had my first job when I was 10, but this game had the most convoluted like crafting leveling system I had ever played. So I printed out a several hundred page walkthrough while I was at work to understand how the coin fame system worked. And I still can't repeat to you anything about how that functioned, even though I tried my hardest to beat that game. Because it was like, oh, if you mix a red and a blue, you'll get a purple. Oh, okay, well, that makes sense. Then if you mix a red and an orange, you'll get a purple. What? What? What is this? So yeah, I wasted lots of work paper about that.
Well, apparently
they shouldn't listen to this podcast. I should be safe, right?
Yeah. I think that job's not even in business anymore.
Perfect.
I feel like the Pokemon games, I feel like for the spinoffs at least, I feel like Colosseum was both the highest point and the last time they've really had anything come close. Because Colosseum had like the double battle system, which was new at the time. They had the darker, grittier story to it. The character who is not 10 years old living with his mom. Just an interesting kind of like an RPG-ish story. And I felt like that's the closest to what most Pokemon fans wanted out of that 3D medium. And they kind of just phoned it in for the sequel, which was DX... or the Gale of Darkness.
Yeah, the Shadow Lugia one.
Yeah, and then after that, they had like the Pokemon Stadium knockoff that, while Pokemon Stadium had like the mini games and everything, this was just literally battle after battle after battle, no story.
Battle Revolution.
Yep, and you mentioned long animations. The announcing was the same phrase over and over and over again. And there was nothing to break up the monotony like you could with Pokemon Stadium, where you could play up through a battle, go, you know what, my friends are over, let's crack open a PBR and do the Magikarp jumping minigame for a little bit to see who's better at button mashing.
Well, even without the minigames, Battle Revolution was a little below par, just by the sole fact that for some reason, all of the trainers were using like baby and stage one Pokemon. And you'd have to battle them over and over and over and over again until they would start getting stage two, stage threes that are actually, you know, worth anything to battle if you transferred your own Pokemon in. So just remember clearing almost all of that game with zero issues. And I don't even think a single one of mine was fainted for the longest time. And I was just very confused. And then you compound that with the fact that everything at the start of Generation 4 was just insanely slow. And if there's a Gen 4 fan who wants to complain about me saying that, look up a video of anything using close combat or superpower on a Blissey in Diamond or Pearl, because that takes like a whole minute to resolve because the calculations are handled just so slowly. And that's how long the battles felt for Battle Revolution, just for every move. It was ridiculous. And there was one feature that I don't think came back for Battle Revolution. Do you remember in Stadium 2 where you could nickname your Pokemon and it would change their color?
Yes.
So I remember having a Mewtwo named Blue-2, and it actually turned it blue.
Hmm.
It was like, this is the greatest game of all time. You could name it something else and it would turn red, and you could change its name to something else and it would be green, and it didn't even have to be a shiny. I thought that system was so incredibly awesome, because having a shiny automatically meant that the Pokemon was unviable competitively, because the way that the calculations were done for their stats, you couldn't have maxed DVs at the time if the Pokemon was shiny, while you could have them otherwise if you just bred it or caught the perfect one and nicknamed it. I thought that was an excellent system. Like, you could have a green Pikachu, a reddish-tinted Pikachu, greenish or a blue kind of colored Scizor. I use Scizor a lot. He is my favorite.
Yeah. So since no one here knows, Vince is actually a artist at naming Pokemon. Osir, you had a Beedrill named Beyonce. And you also had
Kakuna Matata.
Yep, Kakuna Matata. You sent me a Heracross. I could not remember for life me what you nicknamed it for. You traded it to me.
I probably had it named Me So Horny. That's probably what it was.
I think it was. You had a Shuck Norris with your Shuckle.
Yeah, Shuck Norris the Shuckle was a common one.
You also called last it night... your Five Knuckle Shuckle, right? That was your team name, was Five Knuckle Shuckle.
I think that's the name that you attributed to it after watching that one video on YouTube, the one where the guy like names all of the Pokemon. It's not the Everything Wrong With series. I can't remember what it is. It's like the Honest Game Trailers, I think is what it was. I think that's what you named my team after that, because I had the Shuckle with Imprison or Infest. The move that makes you lose 1/16 of your health, but you can't switch out. And then I would just constantly boost my defenses with Contrary and then rest if you ever dealt damage. So you just had to sit in there and watch yourself die slowly. A horrible team. It only worked if someone let me set up that much. But thankfully, sometimes when people aren't prepared for it, they just get caught unawares. Let's see, I just named a Gible that I found, because it evolves into Garchomp, which kind of looks like a shark. I named it Donnie Sharko. And then I wound up finding a shiny one, which was a female, so I named it Sharkeesha. So yeah, like, nicknames have always been my thing, and I think it was Stadium 2 that caused me to pick up on nicknaming every Pokemon I get. There's no color changes anymore. I just do it because I enjoy it.
Coming fall 2021, the Gen Guide to Pokemon Nicknames.
Yeah, exactly, dude.
So, what are your expectations with this new Pokemon Snap game?
Well, I've loved on-rails games for a really long time, like rail shooters. So, like, the light gun games I was a huge fan of as a kid. Like, I spent entirely too much time playing Virtua Cop 1 and 2. Or Star Fox, Star Fox 64, things like that. So just going back to an on-rails score attack kind of game sounds really interesting. I don't know if it's going to, like, tide someone over for 40 hours, because that's not something Pokemon Snap ever did. So it's important to go into that with the appropriate expectations of, this is probably going to be a shorter game. You're paying more for the experience and just to have some fun racking up the highest score that you can.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they do with the Switch, because you got the gyroscope in there, so you can tilt the Switch to move the camera. And I feel like, especially, it's kind of like pseudo VR, to where you could sit with your Switch and to catch photos instead of moving joysticks to aim. you could literally twist back and forth and look around. So I feel like it'll be a nice improvement on where the original Snap started by allowing you to kind of get more into it. And I do agree with you. It's probably going to be something that's 10, 15 hours, maybe longer if you're a completionist or you have to go back through and find all the little Easter eggs. Because I remember like one of them, you had to hit a Magikarp 3 times with a Pester Ball before it would come out as a Gyarados at the waterfall. So when you have to go back through and find all these weird things you got to do. And I think the original Snap only had like 6 levels. So.
Yeah, I don't even remember it having that many. I just remember replaying what it had over and over again to catch like the best shots possible of everything. And then I think in the last stage, you had to try and snap a picture of Mew after getting everything else perfectly too. Then you could take your cartridge and go print out stickers at Blockbuster. Look that one up, kids.
Oh, God. I think I just found some gray hairs in my beard.
Mostly done a good job with these overall, I think.
Because
they offer a different experience. A betting pool?
Yes. I want to see, and I'm going to pass around the office, which game has a longer story, Pokemon Snap or Star Wars Squadrons?
I don't know.
I literally think like it I'm gonna put the over under at an hour and a half. Like I'm genuinely curious on which one can be completed quicker.
I mean, we could look up on like a speed running site and just see how quickly someone blew through them.
Right.
I'd be surprised if they even touched an hour and a half, if I'm being honest with you.
True.
Maybe if we were throwing like Pokemon Ranger into it or something, that the length would improve. But no, not with Snap and Squadron. Now, Pokemon Ranger was another decent one. I think they made 3 of those games, but I only partook of the first because I was afraid of destroying the screen of my DS. It was like Elite Beat Agents, but even worse, because you would call in assists to harass the Pokemon that'd be stomping around on the bottom screen. Then you have to draw circles around it really, really fast. And the entire reason I wanted to play that game was because, if I recall correctly, it was the only way to get Manaphy at the time. And then you could breed Manaphy to get Fion. And that's all I wanted. So I played through the entire thing just to get Manaphy. That was it.
God, like thinking back to DS games, because like it takes me back to the one game like where you make monsters, you gotta like pseudo archaeological dig with a stylus and the DS.
Are you talking Spectrobes?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a fun game.
The DS was also a weird time.
And you can pretty much just say, wow, X period of Nintendo was a weird time.
Fair enough.
That's pretty much all of it. They don't really care about stuff like that.
Nintendo, we're gonna throw this out here.
Exactly. I mean, they're the people who sought out the Mystery Dungeon people to have them make Pokemon spinoffs too. Because like Pokemon Ranger had a ton of support and push from the Pokemon company because they were in the anime. They show up as a trainer class in later games. I don't think anything from Pokemon Mystery Dungeon has actually showed up in the main series games, which makes sense because like almost all of them are about like a human being reincarnated into a Pokemon or something. But
a little dark to hit in the anime that's designed for kids.
Right. And it's funny that you bring up it being dark because a couple of those games have stories that would probably bring a tear to a grown man's eye. Like they have decently good stories and roguelike dungeon crawling gameplay like Sheeran the Wanderer, which that makes sense because they're in the same series. So you kind of venture through places and like when you move, everything else on the floor that you're on moves. So you can take as much time as you want to figure out what your next action is going to be. then once you take a step, everything else is going to move and resolve all of that at once. So you got to be careful when you start getting surrounded and stuff like that. The Mystery Dungeon series is probably my favorite series overall, and it just had a remake of the first games put on the Switch sometime last year, I think. But can I share with you my absolute favorite Pokemon spinoff?
Yes.
All right. The one that I personally think is the best one of them all, and I'm saving this one for last because you are also a Fire Emblem guy like I am, is Pokemon Conquest. I don't know if you ever heard of this one, but it's the one where, like, you have people in old style Japanese samurai armor and stuff.
Wait a minute. I think I know this one. So, you're between these two nations and you have to choose between like a Japanese and a European one. Or am I thinking of Fire Emblem Conquest?
You're thinking of Fire Emblem Fates is what you're doing. And I'm very disappointed in you.
Are you?
Hoshido would come nowhere close to Pokemon Conquest. Like, okay, I enjoyed Fire Emblem Fates Conquest well enough, but like, Pokemon Conquest is actually a really good game in its own right. Like, if it didn't have the Pokemon branding, it would still be a good game. Like, it is weird that you're taking Pokemon as your army and using them to fight against, like, the forces of Nobunaga. And you, like, level up your links with your Pokemon. And it's kind of like a mixture of Final Fantasy Tactics and other, like, simpler strategy RPGs. But I honestly found that to be a great game with a decent world. The story's not great because it's a Pokemon spinoff. Like, you can't expect too much. Like, the Mystery Dungeon games are literally as good as it gets for that. But you, like, traipse through a variety of battlefields. It has music that's so good. I honestly think it's awful that so few people have played this particular Conquest. Fire Emblem Fates Conquest has good music too, but, you know. I think Pokemon Conquest is pretty great.
Is it as hard as Fire Emblem Conquest?
No. If you're doing like a no grind run, like if you avoid doing the DLC in Fates Conquest, Pokemon Conquest is so much easier. Like, you're not going to have any particular issues. And for the most part, your second Pokemon that you get the link with is really, really broken because it's Jigglypuff and it just puts things in adjacent tiles to sleep randomly at the start of turns, which is really freaking cool. But like, Fate's Conquest is substantially harder as long as you avoid doing the DLC. If you throw the DLC and then as long as you're willing to grind, anything's easy.
Yeah, I just want to put the side note on there of Fire Emblem Conquest is one of the hardest games I have ever played, and probably definitely the hardest Fire Emblem I've ever played.
I need to make you play Thracia 776 then. That's the hardest Fire Emblem I've played. And it's because I tried playing it without a guide. I think if you use a guide, the game becomes like super easy to handle. But if you do not use a guide, you will just get blindsided by a whole bunch of flying Pegasus Knights because they get to appear and attack, like move and attack on the same turn they show up. Same turn reinforcements is the worst game mechanic of all time.
Yep.
Second only to healing bosses.
I'm trying to think which other one I dealt with that. I think it might have been FE6 had that.
The one with Roy?
Yeah.
I don't recall same turn reinforcements with Roy. I think most of the difficulty in that one came from Roy not being great until like the last 3 or 4 chapters of the game. And then he just kind of walks because of how powerful the Sword of Seals is.
Yeah. So I'm excited for the Pokemon Snap game. I'm not going to lie. I am kind of hoping that we could get a Switch game in Johto. As much as I don't really like the Let's Go system, if Let's Go Johto is the only way I can get another crack at Gold and Silver, then I'll take it.
Oh yeah, hands down.
I miss how solid of a game Gold and Silver was.
Well, yeah, that was like how you do a sequel. Like, Kanto was not balanced at all, but being able to finish all of one region, then jump into another region just because Satoru Iwata is a really good programmer, mm-hmm. and like beat all of the gym leaders in Elite Four there, then go beat the trainer from the first game.
Yes.
Just thematically, it was great. Like, it did suck that there was no balancing done for the Kanto trainers because they were all like level 50-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of sucked. But everything else about that was absolutely magical. I loved it. The Gen 2 is my favorite particular generation of Pokemon.
Yeah. It was really groundbreaking for the series too, because it had a day-night cycle. You had the ability to keep like the list of phone numbers, and some of them would call you and say, hey, come back and challenge me, and they'd have stronger Pokemon.
Yeah, they introduced hold items, which completely revolutionized battling. And they added two new types. Oh, yeah, like everything that they added was pretty much great. Outside of Ariados, not a huge fan of Ariados. Not a good Pokemon.
And Whitney's Miltank.
Whitney's Miltank was not so bad.
It's bad.
I don't know why everyone complained about it.
Because people like me are dumb and use Cyndaquil and roll out just fucking...
Well, that would be a problem, I guess. Like,
yeah, because...
Second worst starter of that generation. Just going to throw that out there.
My three Pokemon, I think I rolled in... Like, the last... Granted, I have not played Gold or Silver in decades. I remember the last time I went up against Whitney, I had three Pokemon, and it was Quilava, Hoot Hoot, and Spinarak. Rollout just demolished me.
Okay, yeah, if you're using that kind of a team combination, I could understand why you'd have that issue. Yes, I get it now, I think.
But
it's
now,
like your Quilava would get run over by the first two hits, and then everything else just gets one shot.
Yeah, now granted, older and I hope smarter me would obviously go in with things that are different, but at the time, this was the best I could come up with.
Yeah, if you don't have an entire team of the same type with all moves equal to their type, like, oh, your Quilava uses Ember, Flame Wheel, Flamethrower, that's what every kid did. And so, you know, you do the best you can with what you've got.
Yeah,
At least you didn't go in there with a level, like, 30-something Typhlosion when, like, all of your other Pokemon were, like, level 5.
Yeah. I'm honestly, the only thing I don't really like about the Let's Go model, and I don't know, I guess it's some of the later generations too, is I don't like how easy they've made them with experience share, to where you don't even really have to grind up like your team. You just use your one Pokemon, everyone else gets experience.
Yeah, I kind of have issues with that too. I'd like it if it were something you could toggle on and off.
Right.
I don't mind it being on for just being able to grind up what I need to level up. But if I just have something in my party and I don't want it to just randomly start getting EVs from the things that I'm beating, I would like to be able to turn it off. That way I don't start screwing up EV spreads for things in the back. Though that is a... after the story is done kind of problem that is not something most people are going to care about in the long run.
And for me, like, I think the Let's Go model, the thing that bothers me the most is I don't like having to catch the same Pokemon over and over and over, because, like, yeah, so you get the combo bonuses, and I don't want to run around and just keep catching 35 Drowsies and then go catch 25 Vulpixes. Like, I kind of like the old system of let me battle them. It didn't help that I found Let's Go incredibly easy.
Well, yeah, it was definitely real easy. I like it if you could still get experience from battling. Like, it doesn't explicitly have to be a Let's Go style game, because that was kind of to bring in the Pokemon Go players. But, and this is going to be a weird thing, but I don't know if you ever played Pokemon Black and White 2, did you?
I did not.
Okay. So you wouldn't know, but something that most people who even played the games didn't know was that if you beat everything and then chose to start a new game, you could actually pick a hard mode. But obviously, most people wouldn't try to do that because it involves wiping everything that you already had. Mm. So you'd have to trade away all of your stuff or whatever. Maybe it'd be easier with Pokemon Home being available currently. But I'd at least like a way to like store my items, because I have like 8 choice bands that aren't attached to Pokemon. And if you put them at home, they take them off. So I wind up wiping all of those, even though I grinded to get all of the battle points to buy all of the expensive items.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'd be great if they did some kind of adaptive difficulty, like a game stage mechanic. So if they came up with a formula of you win so many battles, or you survive so many battles without a single Pokemon fainting, the level of landmark trainers go up. So, like, the gym leaders, their levels will rise by a certain amount. Maybe they'll get items, EVs, maxed IVs, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then if you lose one, or so many Pokemon faint, the battles start becoming easier by removing those things until you're able to succeed. And they can even make the drop an optional thing. So rather than the level going down, you could have tickets in your backpack that, like, an item that you buy that you can spend to avoid the level going down in case one of your Pokemon faints, just so that way you can maintain the difficulty if you want to. Because from what I understand, children very often do not mess with non-essential items, nor do they tend to look up what these items do. So you can just have something like this in the menu, like the casual and normal modes of the current Fire Emblem games. So the good players who want a higher difficulty can get it, but it won't completely crush the little kids who lost to Totem Lurantis 5 times in Pokemon Sun and Moon. Because believe it or not, even adults that I know lost to Totem Lurantis repeatedly. And that's really funny, but also kind of sad.
Yeah, and I mean, even just simply just offering at the beginning, do you want normal or do you want hard? Because Pokemon's been around long enough, and they know that there are a lot of adults that play Pokemon games, that there are some adults who want a challenge. Truthfully, I'm also hoping that they... I know it's going to be a long time before we get like our next big game, because Sword and Shield's DLC just came out. I'm just hoping that the next one, they take more time to balance out the game a little bit, to not make it as short as it was, and to not make your rival ungodly annoying. Where at the end of the game, you hit him for a weakness and he's like, wow, you really learned a lot. And it's just like, dude, it's been 40 hours. I've been kicking your butt halfway down the world. Like, no, I didn't just learn this. You've seen it. Apparently, I must have knocked you in the head a few times and you've forgotten.
Well, and I do think that Sword and Shield needed a little bit more time in the oven. I think that was probably the worst score I've left on a Pokemon game in a while, because once you hit gym 5 or 6, it's around the time of the ice gym. I don't remember explicitly which one that is.
Five. Because you hit 5, 6, 7, 8 really quick.
Yeah, like it's all taken care of within like 2 hours. And then all of a sudden, when you're finally doing the last challenge, which is effectively the Elite Four, they interrupt it with a final boss battle style event that doesn't even make any sense. Because the bad guy's like, oh, I need to solve... It's like, I know Leon's going to help me, but I want to solve the energy crisis that's not going to affect us for a millennia tomorrow. So I'm going to hatch this thing right now. It makes no sense. It's like they had a story in mind, scrapped it and then just had someone write it up real fast in the writing room and just throw that in. Because that, it also sucks that every single event surrounding this, like with Pokemon just Dynamaxing all over the place, all of that took place off screen, which in one aspect, it's funny because they're actually teaching, or they're actually treating you like the child you are. Because who's going to let a 10-year-old kid run into a dangerous situation where random things are just growing real big and terrorizing people? It makes sense for the adults to be the one to handle that. But at the same time, I want to see the cool things happening. Don't just do all that off screen.
Don't, at least show let me look and see me. It.
Exactly. At least let me look and see that it's happening. Let me see Leon actually do something other than get lost and lose to me. That's all he did the entire game, by the way. He got lost, says like two words, then he loses to you. That's the whole game. That's everything right there.
Going back to the story, the way I like to picture it was there was two writers sitting next to each other, and writer A went to reach over and grab a pen and knocked his coffee onto writer B's outline. And writer A is like, "I'm so sorry, man." And writer B saw like six words and went, "Eh, I got it."
It's like, yeah, I'll go ahead and take care of this now. I'll just bring up whatever I possibly can out of left field for no. And again, like the Pokemon games have never really had great stories. I know that there are fans of Generation 5, and that's probably the closest they've gotten to have, like, any thought-provoking plot elements at all in a Pokemon game. But for the most part, it's just window dressing to get you catching the next, like, little monster that you're going to incorporate in your team. But I do think it would be nice to have something that kind of marries the difficulty elements with the overall story elements, because even in the little anime Pokemon Origins, I think it was, they had a moment where Red was asked by Brock like how many gym badges he has, and he says none. So he's like, okay, I'll only use two Pokemon then. So having that kind of adaptive difficulty where, you know, if you've been winning absolutely everything, maybe Gym Leader 2 is going to throw a full 5 Pokemon at you who are like around what they would expect your level to be, that kind of thing. I think that'd be a great idea, but it would take a lot more time to develop. And looking at the state of like the wild area, the end of that game, they probably wouldn't be able to do that. Though I guess if they get the time to mess with it, you wind up with something like the Crown Tundra, which I thought was actually a lot better put together than the main game.
Mm-hmm. And it's... it would be nice to have a Pokemon game where it's hard enough that you actually have to have good strategy, good team builds together to win, and not just be able to go, eh, I know it's not the right type, but my Pokemon's 30 levels higher, so I'll just brute force my way through every fight.
Well, I definitely don't think they need to go as far as like what the Pokemon ROM hacks do. There's one that just came out recently, like Rust Red or something like that, and people are raving about how difficult it is and how they want the main series games to be like those. And that would just turn off so many kids from the series that
right.
they would never make up the money. There'd be no point in doing that. And for the most part, when players don't have access to certain items, but other players do, that's already like an insurmountable advantage that other people can have over you. Like if we tried doing a battle right now, I have my entire team kitted out with what I believe to be the best items for them. So on my particular team, I'm using a Dragapult who has like choice specs, choice band, life orb, whatever. So I'm getting 30 to 50% bonus damage. If you don't have anything like that, or, you know, an assault vest to help absorb special hits or whatever, I might just sweep your team with one or two Pokemon, because those percentage boosts are super important. So you can't just throw people into situations like that when they might not be able to breed and train up their team appropriately. And who's going to have the patience to catch an appropriate Pokemon with a weakness move and then train it up, make sure you get all of the right EVs, whatever, or, you know, spend enough of your money on vitamins to boost their EVs, then find the appropriate items, then use that one Pokemon to try and get you most of the way through a gym. That's a lot to ask of a kid. And I understand that. That's why I'd want like the difficulty to kind of move. Cause I think if they just made it a setting you could pick, everyone, including the kids, would just be like, oh, I'm going to pick the hardest one. And then they'll just get like waffle stomped. And that's obviously not what they want to have happen. Cause lowering the difficulty is a sign of weakness. That's scientifically proven. So I think there is an elegant way that they could kind of entertain the people of our age who are still playing games for children and then still leave those games for children. I'm just not certain that they would wind up implementing such a thing in a useful way. But having a hard mode for like Black and White 2 would at least be a slight step in the right direction, even if you have to beat the game once in order to start over with that setting.
Yeah, because let's be honest, how many people have beat a Pokemon game and went, I'd do it again.
Yeah, really. Because all of the items and everything that you tried to find and everything like that, you'd have to go and get them again. I find that kind of stuff to be annoying, personally. Because I want to get to the good part of the game, which is actually playing against people.
Yeah.
That's what I consider to be the most fun portion of the game. That's why I participate in VGC and all this other stuff, or play on Showdown sometimes.
Just so you know, if we ever do battle on Sword and Shield, I want you to know, and I have told my wife this, I have it written down that you would beat me in 45 seconds or less.
There's absolutely no way that I would do that unless you concede. The animations are always going to be turned on no matter what, and I don't think it's possible to resolve the turns in 45 seconds. That's just not a thing that would happen.
I feel like if anyone could find a way, it'd be you.
Yeah, no, I'd have to do that one bug that I think already got patched out where you could make the opponent's game crash. That was a fun bug, if I recall correctly. But no, I would not ever do that. There is no honor in that. But yeah, like we have our qualms with the main series games, but I'm obviously still like a very large fan of the series, even though I am entirely too old to be playing these games, but I will not. Yeah, like I still enjoy them. I still play against people who are far younger than me, or even people of my same age. One of the last people I played against was like 10 years older than me. Hey, he was like, oh, hey, you could have improved this because this was actually the threat.
Hey, Nintendo still likes our money no matter how old we are.
That is exactly the case. My $60 spends the same as like a little kid's parents.
Yeah, I was gonna say Timmy's mom.
Yeah, it all spends the same to them. As long as it's actual currency and not like counterfeit. But if that were the case, I have a much bigger issue than just whether or not the game is good. Then I gotta be avoiding the feds. It becomes an entire thing. It's gonna ruin a weekend.
I saw something on social media that said I pulled out a $50 at a Wendy's and they said, sir, we don't accept those because of counterfeit issues. Can you bring out something smaller? So I pull out a $25 bill.
All right. That is an uncle joke. That's not even a dad joke. That is an uncle joke.
Well, I became an uncle about 3 or 4 months ago, so that explains a lot.
Oh, the transformation is complete.
So I guess we will wrap up there, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to email any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at ginlounge@gameindustry.com. These podcasts will be available on almost every app, whether it be Podbean, Spotify, Audible, Amazon, any place you could think of. It's probably on there, except for Apple. We're fighting with Apple. Give us some time.
It's hard to win fights against Apple. I mean, there's just so many of them, and they fall from trees. Have you ever been hit in the head with an apple that came off of a tree? It can leave a lump. It's awful.
Especially a crab apple.
Especially a crab apple. It makes me a crab apple. In any event, I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll see you here next time.